Hello and welcome to Middle Age Geeks, the podcast where we aim to review and discuss movies, video games, TV shows, comics, anything else really that takes our fancy. My name is Phil, I'm one of your hosts, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Daz Murphy. Daz, how are you?
I'm very good, man. Very good. Slightly groggy today. I woke up from an unintentional nap after putting my daughter to sleep about 20 minutes ago, trying to tell her bedtime stories that get more and more fucking elaborate every night. It's quite ridiculous now. There's a list of recurring characters and scenarios, fucking magic fridges, and golden frogs, and time traveling glitter pictures, and Jesus Christ, it's lots of dinosaurs and total ripoffs of Toy Story thrown in there as well. So yeah, and every now and then there's a moment where you say something completely fucking bonkers to her, and she just goes, "What?"
She's like, you pushed it too far.
Yeah. Was that sleep talk? Yeah. You just got to roll with it. But happy days. How are you, man?
Yeah, Grant. I'm excited to do something a little bit different, you know, for this episode. For those of you at home, because we record this the weekend of May the 4th, Star Wars Day, it is the 25th anniversary of this year. And I don't think it's still July, but it's the 25th anniversary of The Phantom Menace. So we thought it'd be fun to have a chat through, kind of a revisit, and just, you know, how has time been kind to the movie? What we've learned since then, where Star Wars has gone since then, and our experience of seeing this at the time, that kind of thing. It's obviously going to be spoiler heavy, but everybody should know at this point the plot of it or exactly where it came from. I mean, yeah. I don't really think we need to give you a spoiler warning. there are those people out there who say, you probably heard it yourself, that, oh, I've never watched a Star Wars movie. I don't even know what Star Wars is about. I've never watched it. Like, you are a fucking liar. Like, there's not known anything or have never seen anything about Star Wars is the same as saying you've never heard a Beatles song. You know, it's
yeah, it's like saying, what's a lightsaber? It's just like everybody knows certain things. You know, you just, they're ingrained in your DNA.
But I would be really interested after this episode if any of you out there send us on your opinions. What did you think when you first saw it? Did you see it way back when it came out in 99? And what are your opinions on it? But before we get into that, we'll do our usual, and myself and Daz will go through some news that's out there at the moment, and then we'll talk about anything we've been kind of playing or watching at the moment. So, Daz, have you got anything that's kind of jumped out at you in the news this week?
Not really. Especially, well, what I was thinking about chatting about was there was some rumors and leaks about Fallout 5 that recently came out, that it may be coming to our consoles sooner rather than later. And when I read into that, it's more kind of, I think, hyperbole than anything else, because of how well the show was doing, that Microsoft came out and said to Bethesda, we would like Fallout 4 sooner rather than later. And that's what apparently the leak was. And it's just people having conversations behind the scenes and Xbox going, we need to make some fucking money, you know, because we bought all these fucking companies. Because realistically, it's not coming out before 5 or 6 years at least. And I'd say even 10 years with new Skyrim, still about 4 or 5 years away. And I know people have said Bethesda have a load of different studios working on different things, but these games are such colossal undertakings that, I really doubt the studio is able to split right down the middle and do two massive RP, like role-playing games. I was, when I clicked the link, I was, you know, really excited. And then within about 3 minutes, I was like, oh, this is just, it's just nonsense, unfortunately. But that was the main thing that I picked up. I know you have a few news stories. Yeah.
And actually, well, none of mine kind of revolve around games, actually, for a change. The first one that jumped out was, we had mentioned Tron. We did a review of Tron, and we did a VR episode, actually, if anybody wants to check that out. One of our first episodes. But Jeff Bridges is returning for Tron Ares, which I was surprised about. I thought he would have just gone and he finished up after, you know, Tron Legacy. But he's coming back for Tron Ares as well. Like, so, I mean, it'd be great to see if they did a good job at it. Like, I wasn't totally against the sequel. I thought it was okay, you know.
Pretty good. It's got one of the best trailers. I've watched that trailer, like, even recently. It just always pops up. If you go in like a little trailer binge, there's always a few trailers come up, like Dark Knight, Matrix and all that. But Tron Legacy, the trailer is spectacular. The movie didn't quite live up to it, but the music, the visuals, it paints a picture of a an absolutely astonishing movie that we didn't get. But
yeah,
I'd be open to another one, absolutely. And it just shows Jeff Bridges is, he obviously enjoyed making the movies. I mean, they're probably not very easy movies to make. Well, the first one obviously wasn't, because it was fucking madness. But he obviously enjoyed making them. Or I don't think he's much of a gamer, but he obviously enjoys kind of getting into the lore a bit more. He wants to get into it a bit more, which is great. He doesn't need the paycheck, like.
No. Yeah, no, that's I'll be interested to watch that one. The other couple of things, one of them was the trailer for The Boys season 4 came out. I'm not sure if you watched it. Are you up to date with The Boys?
No, yeah. See, I haven't seen season 3 at all, but I watched the season 4 trailer because it's just hard not to watch a trailer like this.
Right.
And some of it, yeah, I don't think it's like when you watch a trailer, like in retrospect, after I see season 3, I might go, Jesus, there was loads of spoilers in that trailer, but it's so fastly cut and fast paced, and it's just a visceral kick in the face trailer. It's astonishing. But
and it's not far away. It's like it's June 13th, you know, and so next month.
Well, need to catch up.
Yeah, like it's excellent. And you could see in the background of one of the scenes as well, they had one of the characters from Gen V. So obviously they're continuing the crossover. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that should be fun. I'm really looking forward to that. That looks fucking class. The animals that seem to get superpowers, like these fucking sheep.
Yeah,
fucking flying sheep. Obviously they must get injected with compound V or something like that. But it's really funny. And the last thing is the I mentioned being a fan in our wrap up episode at the end of last year. I was saying Talk to Me. I put it on my top 5.
Oh yeah.
Of my favorite movies from last year. So the directors of that, Danny and Michael Philippou, they're making a new horror movie with starring Sally Hawkins. And it's A24 again. A24 did the first one. I do feel like A24 should be paying me some sort of, you know, every time I mention them.
Absolutely.
I talk about them so much. I just love I just love their stuff. Yeah. But yeah, like wouldn't it be great if they did a bit of work with the lads who did Late Night with the Devil? But I'm delighted that they're bringing. I know Sally Hawkins is great. I don't know what the plot is. I'm not sure if the plot's being released, but fucking sign me up. So I'm looking forward to that. But now that's all I had in the way of news. Apart from the bit of sad news, and that was the passing of Bernard Hill, who people will know from Lord of the Rings, and he was the captain in the Titanic. And he's 79, I think. Like. Fantastic actor. So that's a bit of a bummer weekend. All right. But no other news. Have you been kind of watching or playing anything over the last week? Anything new?
Nothing really new. Well, I started playing Top Spin 2K25. It's a sequel 14 years in the making to one of the best tennis games ever. And it's suitably brilliant.
You say because Mario Tennis is the best one? Like,
oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the original Mario Tennis on the N64 back in 1997 or whatever.
What a game.
Astonishing game. Will never be beaten. Apart from that, more Dave the Diver. The game's still, still fucking blowing my mind. It's just, I talked to it last week about how expansive it was, and it keeps delivering more and more stuff. And now I'm like in a completely new underworld city with these mad fucking ancient people who breathe underwater from thousands of years ago. Now I'm doing fucking errands for them. I have a fucking a fish farm, a rice farm. It's just like, I don't know where this game is going. Like, is it going to go to outer space? I don't know, but it's fantastic. And I actually got some great feedback from what's his name? I think from Neil in New Jersey, who I knew from years and years ago, got onto me, and like he's a self-confessed like avid first-person shooter, like Call of Duty, fucking Battlefield, Battlezone, like anything. And he was listening, and he said he'd just give it a go because it's PlayStation Plus, just for shits and giggles. And he said he's about 20 hours into it now.
Good man.
His quote was like, "I'm sitting here in my boxers, and I don't know what's happening, but I'm he's a Dave lover, which is fucking great." Like.
After you said it, I went onto the app my PlayStation app on my phone and downloaded it just so it doesn't pass me by when it's finished the game. So No, I will get to it because, yeah, everything I've seen, apparently it's just fucking fantastic. So
it's just, you know, you got half an hour to kill, and that half an hour will inadvertently turn into 3 hours. But yeah, loving that. In terms of what I watched, finished Fallout. Yeah, fucking loved it. I loved how it played out. I loved how it left you yearning for more.
Yeah, don't say anything about being. After all my talk of being a fan of binging stuff, I haven't actually binged it. So,
no way. That's the first time I've ever fucking finished something before.
Yeah. So don't tell me.
No, yeah, but it just leaves you wanting more, and everything is just set in motion. It's just really, really, really good. Great cast. Great. I just love the way there's the kind of wasteland surface, then they touch and they keep going back to, you know, the vault, and they keep going back to the past. And that's they keep that going throughout, which is brilliant. It's just great storytelling. Love that. But in terms of what I was playing today was air hockey with my daughter in an arcade for the first time.
Did you let her win?
No, I beat her 10-0. Fucking, she's rubbish. But no, she won. Yeah, 7-6. And then we tried playing a dinosaur arcade shooting game, like some Jurassic Park knockoff. And that is well and truly a little bit too intense for a 4-year-old.
Okay.
So it's just like, yeah, back to the spinning fucking car or whatever. Because most of the time when you sit down watching kids, you spend 2 euros and they sit in this little car like designed as a donut and a little screen in front of them. They pay no attention to the ride they're on. They're just looking at everything else. And you're just like, it's 2 euros for a 20-second fucking car ride that you're paying no attention to. You fucking hell. Can we go in another thing? No, we fucking can't. But yeah.
That's everything. But you live like 5 minutes from the beachfront fucking amusements. Yeah. Like, I mean, you're just right beside it the whole time.
Yeah, it's very hard.
Other parents can
say,
no, we can't. It's raining outside, or we can't. It's too far away. You've no fucking excuse. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump.
If I say it's closed, you can say, but I can see the doors open. She's like, God damn it. I need to put blinds on the fucking car windows. But yeah, it's great. What have you been watching and playing? Anything new?
I haven't really played anything new anyway. I've kind of just been dipping in and out of different things. But I watched a couple of new things that I hadn't seen before. So the first one was the Sydney Sweeney movie. Sydney Sweeney just seems to be in everything at the moment.
Yeah.
Movie Immaculate.
Mm. No.
It's
any
good? Horror. Not very good. No, it's a horror. Not great. But there's some good gore in it. Despite being pretty crap, but there's some good gore in it, like some fucking stupid moments. Basically, she kind of goes into like a convent or whatever. And the whole idea is that they reckon she's, you know, immaculately conceived, you know, the next coming of Christ or whatever. And of course there's all twists and turns and everything's not what it seems, as you can imagine. But it's just funny because some of the death scenes are gas, you know, considering it's about a bunch of nuns and priests. Like it's stupid, but it flew by. It was watchable. And the other thing was, the TV show Them? I'm sorry if anybody in the background. Yeah, anybody listening can hear clicking and clacking. It's the fucking, my dog is going bananas here and is biting my hand because he wants attention. So if you can hear anything in the background, I apologize. It's like a horror anthology series. They do, like, you know, the first one I watched was the first season set in the 50s. And then I think the latest one is set more in present day or something. I haven't watched it yet. But just because I'd heard season two was like miles better than season one, I was like, oh, fuck it, I must check this out and see what it's like. But it sounds similar to what American Horror Story do. You know, they have the same cast come back the following season.
Kind of anthology kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, but no, like I really enjoyed it. Like, it's, I mean, that there's some incredible performances from Deborah Ayerinde and Alison Pill in particular. Are really good. A lot of gross, you know, disgusting racism because it's 1950s America, you know, and they're in a town, and it's a black family moving into a predominantly white town, you know. But it's really, really good. So I'm looking forward to getting stuck into season two, which has only just came out there in April. So I'm looking forward to watching that. Nothing really else. So yeah, that's about it. So I suppose, yeah, with that stuff out of the way, we can move on then to the main section. So as I said, we're going to do Phantom Menace, and Daz will take us through it, but we'll kind of turn it into a bit of a discussion around Star Wars as well as the movie itself, as we said at the start, top of the show. So Daz, whenever you're ready, take it away.
Cool beans, thanks, man. So yeah, it was good to actually go back and watch this movie, because I don't know when the last time I actually fully watched it. I remember, like, in the cinema, I saw this again fucking 12 or 13 times. I was one of those people who went to see a movie to see the trailer and then kind of left after 10 minutes of the movie. I can't remember what movie it was.
You're one of those people.
I did it once.
They said like 76. I saw the Oak saying that some theaters said that like up to 75% of the audiences for some of their films
Meet Joe Black. They say like about a good 50 to 60% of its first 2 weeks box office run was down to people going to see the trailer, and then like it was sold out everywhere. But if you went in, you know, 10 minutes into the movie, there's just five people in seats. It's like, how's this movie doing so well? It was crazy. But like, I do remember the hype of the trailer back then, and like seeing it on the news, you know, like news where people were literally in this, like I checked on YouTube, and it's an actual fact that it's like 3 or 4 weeks people were camped out outside cinemas, you know, to get fucking tickets just to go into this this movie, which is fucking bananas. But like watching it back again, it was it was exciting to see how time was going to treat this movie, especially because of, and we will no doubt get into our thoughts on the sequel trilogy, and the first one being, you know, carbon copy, safe, and then the other two being, you know, train wrecks in my opinion. But watching it back again and watching it with earphones, the best thing about having kids is you just have to watch everything fucking earphones blaring. And that opening Star Wars thing, that brought me straight back to the fucking cinema of like being there for the first time watching a Star Wars film. And for me, I want to get your opinion on this as well, or your thoughts. Like for me, my first time actually properly seeing Star Wars fully, the movies, was about 7 months before seeing The Phantom Menace, which is fucking bizarre. Like, I never had Star Wars toys or anything like that. When I went around to my friends, they had Star Wars toys. I didn't really know who the fuck these people were, or these kind of robot dog things that I thought, you know, the AT-ATs. I was just like, what the fuck is that? Cool, let's play with that. I was like into Turtles and Transformers and stuff. But I'd obviously seen, like, I'd seen lightsabers and, you know, things like that. But when I rented the movies to watch them, rented them on VHS, and it was just great to fucking, you know, when you watch them, you realize, oh, I have seen half this movie on TV somewhere. But that's what, when I was watching The Phantom Menace and seeing that opening crawl, it still gives you kind of goosebumps, right? And it's just, and I'm not really a Star 100%. Wars fan, but it just, and I remember that, just that initial in the cinema, just waiting for it. And it's that fucking pause after a long time in a galaxy far, far away, that pause that feels like, like the first time it's almost a shock when Star Wars comes on screen, but when I was in the cinema, like the following 10 or 11 times I saw it, there's so many moments that you're excited to be there with Star Wars fans, and that's those two seconds are right there when it just goes fucking opening crawl. It's absolutely spectacular. Like, what were your thoughts going into it way back when? Were you like
way back when
I was ahead or what?
Yeah, like, because I mean, like, the ones that before, I was a fan, obviously, all, you know, as my childhood, I played with, you know, Star Wars toys, the whole lot, and watched the movies. But I mean, like, the third one came out only a year after I was born, you know, so like before I really knew what was I was enjoying and going out, like I was four or five, whatever, it was into the, you know, the mid to late 80s. But I loved it. I played with all the toys, my friends all played with the toys, my cousin Damo, which just had all of the ships and everything, and he was one of these people who kept all the little guns and everything was pristine and perfect. But I go over and see the collection he had, and he was Star Wars mad, and it was just, it was a huge part of all the stuff I loved when I was growing up. But the thing about this one was that this was the first one of my generation, you know, because the ones that were out in the 80s were all for people who were born in, like, fucking, you know, in the 60s, and who got to fucking play these ones in the late 70s. And that was their time. This is the stuff that came before. It was like when we talked about Star Trek, I knew that the original Star Wars was the time before, whereas Next Generation came out at a time where you know, appreciate and enjoy it. And that's like with this, that was the build up to this was, yes, this is our Star Wars. Because I knew the cultural effect and everything that Star Wars had at the time. It was the fucking biggest sci-fi thing that had ever happened. It was huge, you know. And that's what, so there was so much pressure on it. You know, I was, this was like, this is going to be fucking unreal. And the trailer was fucking outrageous. You know, you're playing like Jewel of the Fates. It's just one of the best Star Wars songs, you know, and it's just, you're seeing fucking Darth Maul, one of the most badass bad guys of any franchise. There was so much pressure on it to be good. And I think even the first time walking out of it, I was like, yeah, gaslighting myself into thinking I enjoyed it, you know, and then it's kind of going to see it the second time and going, oh, this is good. Like, I was kind of, you know, and we'll get into it, obviously, but fucking Jar Jar Binks plays such a large part in that, you know.
Like, I mean, yeah, like, yeah, I know exactly. Like, there's so many good points and so many bad points as you go through it, but like, I think rewatch it, like, it starts, I thought it starts really well, although it's still very hard to, like, George Lucas, we know, just can't fucking write, especially dialogue, whatever. But in terms of world building and characterizations and setting scenes, it, like, the first three movies is pretty exceptional, for the most part. So where it came to doing this, and I was actually watching YouTube again yesterday, that it wasn't that long a wait. But like, it was 83 for Return of the Jedi, and then it was 1993 when he announced we're going to get, you know, this new trilogy. So it's not one of these 20-year gap between fucking movies, or, you know, or Top Gun Maverick, 30 years or something. So he wasn't like coming back and just being completely out of whack with stuff. He was already like 10 years after it came out, after Return of the Jedi came out, he was back writing, had an idea and all this kind of stuff. But where, like, kind of trade disputes comes into it is quite baffling. Like, it starts very well. It's like, it doesn't really start like a kid's movie or a kid friendly movie in that way, where, you know, starts with the trade dispute and, you know, the ambassador has been sent to deal with the trade dispute. And I love the way that when Neeson and McGregor are, I don't know if they're supposed to be hiding the fact that they're Jedis when they go, but they're just dressed in the most obvious fucking gigantic hoods and just like, just blend in, guys, just blend in. It's just like, that was fucking, that kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. But that whole sequence is, I thought, it was fucking brilliant. It's that they're like, Liam Neeson, I don't think gets enough credit for being the kind of leading man. It's just, like, this is, I know it's Anakin's story, but Jake Lloyd is a fucking, you get into that fucking little dope. But Liam Neeson carries this fucking movie. It's his, it's we're following him throughout the whole story. So his and Ewan McGregor's interplay at the start is really, like, it plays really well. Like, it's a lovely build up to how we're going to get to finally see the Jedi in action, and when that moment when they are Palpatine has instructed them to, you know, get rid of the Jedi, and the room is gassed as they're waiting to see their contact, and the droids open the door, you know, and it's all misty, and you just get the two lightsabers just illuminated in the fucking gas. That's still, even watching it yesterday, it's just like a fist pump moment. It's like, oh, fuck yeah. Like, it's really fucking cool. And that whole sequence from then on is just really fucking cool. It's like Liam Neeson lightsaber through a door, trying to fucking melt the door down. It's just, that's awesome. Fucking cool. I wish, like, and this is such a bone of contention with fans and non-fans, is there, when those rolling droidicas come out and they do the run, that force dash when they get out of the way, just going, holy fuck, that's pretty fucking cool. Never ever seen again for in the history of fucking Star Wars, which was, you know, that's the kind of thing where I could have done without that. But what are your thoughts, like, of the, just how it starts? Well, like, it's unnecessary, convoluted for sure. Like, but
yeah, it is, but it's fucking awesome. Like, they're in the room full of, you know, the gas after they tried to gas them, and it's just that, yeah, the you can see the glow inside, you know, and then the fucking droids come in, and it's awesome, because obviously we got more of it in episodes 2 and 3, but like, for the original trilogy that we had seen, episodes 4, 5 and 6, the, you know, the only kind of Jedi really going in and fighting people for the most part is Luke, you know, because in the first one, Luke is just, he's not, he's dressed up as a stormtrooper in some point, just all that kind of stuff. And it's Obi-Wan as the Jedi. And then Luke, you know, so this is the first one. Now we've got multiple Jedi. The Jedi are out fucking, we're like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to have a bunch of fucking Jedis. What's better than one dude with a lightsaber? A whole fucking mess of them going around kicking ass. So that was really excited to see it. It's like, okay, and both of them, you know, they're both great actors. I loved Qui-Gon. I thought he was a brilliant character. I thought this is so good. It set up so well. And I love that, like you said, that sticking the lightsaber through the blast doors and melting it from the inside and stuff. Like, oh, fucking awesome. Like, it's cool. Really, really good.
It's doing cool things with the lightsaber. You know, you're just going like, what can you fucking do with this thing? And they kind of, they don't really do as much in that aspect as we go on. But yeah, another thing that kind of struck me watching it again is, One of the next scenes we're not gonna do a scene by scene, we're just gonna kind of have a chat and meander and see where this goes. But the Naboo Parliament scene, which it still stands up completely visually, and I was just like, geez, that looks good, and it's because it's a real fucking set. They're in this fucking gorgeous little parliament building with fucking the bricks and pillars, and you know, it looks fantastic. And there's such a contrast between certain scenes that just really fucking date, like, you know, unless they're fully CG, they still look kind of cartoony and kind of kind of a washed out palette or whatever. But some of the scenes that, and this was obviously George Lucas was relinquishing his grip on real sets by just going fully CG. And you, like Ewan McGregor in episode 2 and 3 was saying, going to work on Star Wars essentially was acting or just walking into a room and looking up. I said, that's what it was. You're walking into green fucking rooms. But I loved the fact that there just was. And as we get to it later on when they go to Tatooine, and it's just, I remember seeing the behind the scenes set photos where they just built all the huts and the animals and all animatronics. And when it's not miniatures, they've just built the models of things like the pod race, and they're, you know, the actual bits of the racer that they're walking around are actually just, somebody just fucking built them. You're just going, oh, bring it on. But George Lucas would obviously just go fully fucking CG after that, which is a bit of a disaster. But I loved how it just gets fucking straight into the invasion. Like, within about 10, 15 minutes, ships are just dropping back.
We're 11 minutes in when we meet Jar Jar. So before we meet Jar Jar, obviously they've stowed away on the droids that are getting, droid army ships that are getting dropped down to the planet.
Mm.
So, you know, just straight away, they've literally just, as you said, the Trade Federation is such a fucking weird choice to make. But anyway, you straight away going, okay, fucking, I, at this point I'm thinking, okay, the pacing is actually almost too fast, you know, because we've started off, and as you said, it's a little bit convoluted. But the pacing is, I'm only just going to introduce, and straight away it looks like we're getting into our first battle and everything that's going on. I did, before we move on though, to that all Jar Jar nonsense, I did love the costumes, like the Queen Amidala's get-ups that she wears throughout it. They're done so well. And I saw a thing saying that, what's her face? Keira Knightley's mother was on set and didn't know that they couldn't tell the difference, or mistook one for the other, because they looked, when they were all dolled up in their makeup, they actually looked so similar that even her mother, Keira Knightley's mother, got them mixed up, which is mad. But it's
kind of cool.
Yeah, I think she apparently, Keira Knightley's a mad Star Wars fan. That's why she wanted to be in it. But there's a lot of great stuff that, as we'll get into the movie, but it's just, I do think when we hit Jar Jar Binks, that 11 minute mark was when, even in the cinema, that was kind of the first time seeing it, was that, oh no. Like, what the fuck? Like, you know, because you'd seen him in the trailer going, you know, you said people are going to die or whatever he's saying in the trailer. Yeah. And then I was like, what that's about? Like, hopefully he's not in it. Doesn't feature prominently in the movie. But yeah,
I hope he's not one of the main fucking characters. Like Jar Jar, it's just, you could have a podcast alone on him. It's strange because it's... There are always, like, the Star Wars are movies for everybody, but like everyone saw them. It's the same with computer games and stuff. When you first play them and first see them, you're a kid, and then you grow up and they still hold their value to you because they work for kids and adults alike, and like good Pixar movies and stuff like that, they cater for every audience, because it's just not tastefully done, but just cleverly done in terms of jokes and stuff. But Jar Jar just comes across like he's ridiculous. He is ridiculous. He always was. He always will be. But it's like every time he's in a scene, it's like George Lucas has said, "Oh, this will be funny." You know, every time he says something, slapstick. He's saying something for the audience, for the camera. It's not looking at the camera, but it's as close as you can get from breaking the fourth wall and going, "Oh, nudge, nudge, wink, wink." It's kind of like he's not saying things to people. He's just saying things he thinks are funny at all, and I'm going to say it a funny way. And it's almost like there's a break after he says it for people to laugh or something. It's just, he drove me fucking insane. And I just thought he would, you know, I remember watching it back in the day, like you're saying, and just going, oh no, hope maybe he's not in it for long, or is there an arc to him where he, you know, I know he becomes, he's supposed to become a little braver or whatever, or is there something going to happen, or please let him die and somebody, you know, let his death be a rousing moment for somebody or something. But he's in it far too much. And
yeah,
he just takes a star off the movie instantaneously when he comes on screen. He's just fucking stupid.
But you say that you're talking about, you see a movie and sometimes it's aimed at kids, and that's why but is he aimed at kids? Did kids enjoy him? I don't think they did. I don't think there's kids rushing out to buy Jar Jar Binks toys, or that, no. Like, it's become a meme now where people will have a fucking Jar Jar Binks t-shirt because time has passed and people are very the people are very kind to the prequels now, that so many years have passed, people speak quite fondly of things. Now I think Revenge of the Sith is a decent movie, but like Attack of the Clones is the worst Star Wars movie. I think it's absolutely abysmal, and but a lot of people like it. I think time can be kind to these things, but I don't see at the time, or even now, how anybody could actually like that character. Like, I mean,
no,
I know people have even said I've gone as far as to call it offensive. You know, and as you said, it's this buffoonery that keeps coming off, that keeps working out for him. You know, like, as in, you know, the later on when he falls on the robot, and the robot or the droid's cut in half, and he's jumping. Each time he jumps, the robot flops, and his fucking laser gun goes off and it hits a different person. The tank that gets blown up, he doesn't mean to throw that on top of you, and he just can't catch it when your man throws him a bomb, a grenade. And so he juggles it, and it just happens to land, bam, and fucking kills. And every time he does something like that, it's completely by accident. He's just looking his way into all these things, and it's so slapstick, it might as well be fucking like Three Stooges style comedy, you know. And it really is the worst part of the movie for me. As you said, he's in it so fucking much.
Like, it's a good point you made. Like, it's how he talks as well, and it's, you know, is it offensive? Is it, you know, this kind of cultural appropriation, weird merge of some, like, I just don't really understand why. It's just, it's a very strange voice choice, an accent choice. But yeah, no, it's like he could be in it, and if it's kind of like, oh, here's a funny character, a quirky character or something like that, you can easily do that and not have it, and you chose the right word there, buffoonery. It doesn't have to be so fucking stupid and childish and just kind of lame and lazy. You can easily tap into the inner child and everyone and fucking kids watching it by just making a cooler character, or someone just not as fucking annoying. It's just, and I'd love to hear anyone who saw it when they were a kid. Did they like it? Yeah, hit us up and see about that. But one of my other notes watching it is just Ewan McGregor is just so fucking young, man. He's so young. This is like, he started shooting this, you know, 2 or 3 years after fucking Trainspotting, and you're just going, holy shit. It's just, it's unbelievable. And he gets better. I don't think he's too good in this movie, but he gets better in the subsequent movies, I think, a lot. And I was watching a clip from, what's the third one? Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah.
That's the third one, yeah. Where he's doing a fucking acting masterclass in that movie, because it's just raw emotion and he's going for it, where in this it's just it's just George Lucas. It's just the painful dialogue. It's just, come on, George, just let someone else. It's your world, but let someone else write how people just actually fucking talk. It's just very, it's amazing. Because he can draw absolute woodenness out of seasoned actors and emerging actors. But I was touching on visual effects. We might talk a little bit of the visual effects.
Yeah, I think some of the visual effects have aged quite well. Like, I mean, when they meet Jar Jar and they go
underwater
down
city.
The underwater city.
I thought that looked amazing.
Swimming down, I was like, actually, that looks pretty good. Mm. The underwater city looked pretty good. And the CG, even the characters, even Jar Jar and whatever his name is, big boss guy, King of the Gungans, like they, for 25 years, I mean, it's not that bad. But it's for like, I think overall, if you think for 25 years, I think that's aged pretty well.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's some parts that aren't great, but even some of the space battles look great, you know, because we're talking a lot of shit going on the screen at once. And it's not like, as you said, the original movie with models, so much of this is just on CG, you know. And yeah, no, I was actually quite impressed. You know, I haven't watched this movie in a good few years, so it was I was surprised at the same when I was looking at the effects, thinking actually this isn't too bad, you know, it looks grand.
I thought that was really good. That underwater city, especially the boss, whoever his name is, I always thought at the time that his mouth and the animation of his when he's speaking, I thought it's just fucking fantastic. But I think that kind of washed out kind of palette, which is always a case of dated CGI, that kind of works when it's underwater because it just has this ethereal kind of look, which is fucking great. But then up back in Naboo, we have the go back to the invading forces, and that's when we get our first treat to the kind of Imperial March, and John Williams really kind of like flexing a few muscles there. John Williams, who has been nominated 1,500 times for an Oscar, I think. I think it's like 55 times he's nominated for an Oscar. It's just the music of this is just, you could play his music to someone rolling a pen off a table, and it would be the most suspenseful thing you've ever seen in your fucking entire life. Is it going to roll off? I just think he's absolutely fucking amazing. What do you think about? We're going to get into Duel of the Fates, but like Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, yeah. I love his choices in this, and you know, and he hasn't lost it either. Like I know, obviously we'll get on to that, maybe the sequels later on, but like Ray, I love Ray's tune that he wrote, you know, for Daisy Ridley's character, you know, Ray in Force Awakens. Gorgeous tune, and he still obviously gets it. You know, he gets what's needed for these type of movies. But the choice is everything. There's such standout tunes. I mean, there's such recognizable tunes to anybody who's a Star Wars fan or not. You know, you're going to recognize a Star Wars tune, recognize the Jaws theme tune. He's just, he's absolutely incredible. He really is.
Yeah, and actually the fact that he's only won 5 Oscars and the original Star Wars being one of them is fucking criminal when you look at his repertoire. Astonishing. But, I just thought that music was lovely. But when we get to Tatooine, it's one of my favorite locations in this, one of my favorite parts in the movie, because it just plays very, very well. It's everything looks great. We get to the pod race in a bit, but the only issue with this is that they chose Jake Lloyd as Anakin Skywalker. And bar, you know, I'll give him a bit of credit, bar a few moments when he's saying goodbye to his mom and stuff like that, which are a little bit, you know, he's doing his best. But I remember at the time, it was a similar thing with Jar Jar. You're just going, oh, fuck. He is actually as bad as he looked in the trailer. I thought this, I hated this little kid at the time. All I was thinking about, I think when we saw this, I don't know if Sixth Sense had come out or not, but I always thought, like, if they just imagine if Haley Joel Osment was fucking Anakin Skywalker, what a different, obviously a little bit of a darker movie. That kid looks fucking like he's possessed or something. But Jake Lloyd, apart from Jar Jar, definitely the most divisive element in the movie. I think he's he's kind of a silly kid with a kind of an annoying voice, and at times you just wonder why he was chosen, because it doesn't look like he could act his way out of a fucking out of a paper bag.
Yeah, I feel bad for him though.
The spotlight is just thrust on him. Like, this is the biggest.
Yeah, like he stopped acting after this, as far as I know. Like, I mean, he took backlash, like, because he was taking backlash as a child. He's taking a backlash for the movie being crap. I was like, listen, you can give it about his performance if you want, but it's not his fucking fault. The movie didn't live up to your expectations. But he said, even in school, there'd be kids making, you know, lightsaber noises as he walked past and different things like that, just jeering him. And so he didn't, you know, I think he might have made an appearance on something after he grew up a bit. But he'd retired from acting because of it. I don't think he's great in this. I didn't like that, the character. I mean, we knew, spoiler alert for anybody listening, Anakin Skywalker grows up to be Darth Vader. But we already knew that was so intrigued to see what this younger kid looked like. You know, what was he like as a kid? Because this is all we've seen is Darth Vader. So to finally see what he was like as a kid, and how did this happen to him? How did he change? You know, he was so annoying that we're kind of like, you know what? I'm kind of glad you got killed. Like, he was just, and again, like Jar Jar, the stuff that comes off from is all this fucking accidental stuff. And he's like, what does this button do? Or, oh, let's try spinning. That's a good trick. You know, and
that line alone is just for fuck's sake. Because you take everything that was good that he was doing, like, and we get to, like, in the pod race, he comes across as like, he is fucking a bit of a,
oh, he's, yeah, bit he's of a pulling whisker switches, genius. Flicking things around. He's building his own pod racer.
And then he turns into a caricature, kind of like,
we're on him. Like, when we jump ahead, when we get to that, when he's in the fighter later on, you know, it just so happens, he goes, we have to work the guns. I wonder, is it this one? And he presses a button. That's the turn on, make it lift off button. Okay, maybe it's this one. He pulls the next one. No, that's the cockpit button that closes it and gets it ready for takeoff. I was like, hang on, how did both of those buttons happen to be the ones that gets your ship ready to go? And then he goes, oh, this one must be the gun. Kills all the robots. And then the ship, for some reason, is an automatic pilot and fucking takes them up. And it's everything like Jar Jar is done by chance, by luck, you know, and that's
that's the Force. So the Force is strong with this one. He's just a fucking master of circumstance. Flick all the switches and see what happens.
He's essentially Domino from Marvel movies. I think the pod race, as you've alluded to, I think this is great. This is one of the best parts of the movies because it's like 15 minutes long and there's practical, makes it real. The research that went into it as well by was it Bert? I can't remember his name, but I'd read about it at the time. The way he'd done the setup for it, like he had planned the whole race out by things at home, like sitting his kids in like laundry baskets and going, right, you go up this way. And you did, and he had the whole thing mapped out, like, you know, he picked the sounds out of like an American football game. Like, they put so much work into this, and it really shows. And at this point, from Anakin, as you said, we're seeing him completely adept at, he's built this pod racer, he's flying along, and issues that are coming up, he's going grand, he's diverting power from one thing to the other, like, it's
fucking brilliant.
Super reflexes, super skilled. So he's got all this stuff, and I think that's what makes it even worse when he just turns into this little bumbling chancer later on, you know. But the scene, like, the pod racing is fantastic. I love the video game that came out about it as well, the Star Wars pod racing game.
Fucking amazing. And a lot of people said, you know, that this scene is a scene to sell, you know, a video game. And I think that's not doing it enough justice. I think it's, at the time, it was a perfect showcase of why, as Qui-Gon says, you know, they didn't land there by chance or whatever. There's a reason, because a vergence in the Force or something like that, and it's all about this kid. He's going to bring balance and all that. And Qui-Gon fully fucking believes this, and that's why this race, and it's such a prolonged race, that it does showcase his problem solving skills and his absolute fucking mastery as a kid of doing like some of those first person shots going through the kind of canyons, and it's fucking unbelievable. I remember at the time in the cinema, just there's a gasp when it ends, just like, holy fucking hell, you know, even if the movie's shit, which it was, just going, I'm going 10 more times just for this fucking 10 to 15 minutes. It's just phenomenal. It was just so fast. And there's,
What else? It's the sound too. Like your man sound design kind of this,
is amazing.
He's doing a couple with the sound for the lightsabers and all that kind of stuff. The sound of the pod racers is just incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
It's just when they pass that by the camera. It's like you're on board and the sounds are great, but it's just those kind of just panning shots when you're in a ravine or something like that, and they fly past you, and it's like it's just like fucking hell. It's just. Yeah, it's pretty badass. And Sebulba's a fucking prick, and you really want him to lose, like a bit of an asshole.
Yeah, and he's a cool-looking alien, actually. He's a great, really well-designed. I love that, the walking on the arms with the feet out in front of him. He's awesome-looking. It's definitely, for me, is one of the highlights of the one of the highlights of the movie is that pod race.
Absolutely. And then, you know, obviously, he says goodbye to his mum after. And we get it's teetering on the edge of being sappy or being poignant. It's kind of like, oh, if he was just a bit more of a better actor, you'd really sell this, because his mom, she's great. Like, but it's around this time that
there's not enough. I don't think there's no way. Like, just there's no way near enough emotional weight put on that. Like, we're talking about. Yeah. This is her only child. This is a miracle child, because we'll talk about the midichlorians now in a minute. But this is her only child. This kid is eight years old or whatever he is. Like, she's sending him off with two strangers. Like, she's like literally sending him off with two strangers. And I get it. Well, look, at least it gets him away from being a slave. Now you can be free and stuff. Okay, that's fine. But it still must be a fucking horrible choice. This is your only child. You're there alone in this place. For you to hand them over to these people, even to give them a better life, should be absolutely soul crushing. Mm. Whereas she's just like, the choice is up to you. You know, this is your path that's laid before you. It's up to you. She should be in fucking bits about this. And it's just, they don't put anywhere near enough emotional weight on it.
And we've spent enough time on the planet with them. Like this chunk, they take a good, you know, like I've said, the pod race is 10 to 15 minutes long. So it's about, you know, half an hour, maybe a little bit more that we're on the planet. With them, they take their time. This movie is 2 hours 15 minutes long, so there's enough time for it not to be just a very quick plot point. There should have been some tears there, should have been, but the midi fucking chlorians are
do you think George Lucas is lying about this? So like, he said that it was written, there's no proof of it, but he said that he had this shit written down back when he did the original Star Wars. I mean, he's like, it was in a notebook. I had it down. It just wasn't put into that stuff. And then when he obviously brought this, it was kind of thrown in on top of it, but he was like, you kind of have to take his word for it that he did have it written down. I was like, well, how come no one, you never mentioned anybody? No one else knew you had this written down for your plans. It was just thrown into this movie. And
he might have had somewhere when he was coming up with this. With Star Wars, which is like most great movies, whatever, was kind of taken from different parts of different movies from all around the world that he had seen, Asian movies and stuff like that. But he obviously comes up with the Force and all that. But I mean, how much do you go into that? Or how much, like, if he had written a lot about the Force and midichlorians and all that stuff, to not have any of that in the first movie would be strange.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think he's lying, but I don't think it's as prevalent a thing to his story as he says it is. I don't think it was a massive part of his notebook back in mid-70s.
And to be honest, we didn't need it. You know, we don't need it. Nobody needed it.
It's an absolute fucking, it's pointless. And it's all to kind of go, when Qui-Gon's talking to the Jedi Council later, and he's just going, you know, he's got a big balance of the Force, and he might have been, you know, conceived by the midichlorians himself, and you're just going, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you don't need to, like, he's just coming, the second coming of Jesus Christ or something, you know, just like the father of the baby or something. We just don't need it. You can allude to that without going into this midichlorian shy. It's just like, it's just the Force, and, you know, that's fucking cool. We don't need to know anything else. That did kind of wreck my head. But then when they're leaving that planet, we get the first fight with Maul. Very brief, but yeah, how do we uh How do we talk about him without gushing over?
Like
it's just one of the best villains.
He is. He's one of the best looking villains. It's I mean, it's Ray Park.
Ray Park. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 8.5 minutes of screen time and 3 lines of dialogue. I mean, that's what I went to the posters for this guy. I'm like, this is insane. And before the movie came out, I bought 2 posters. Mm-hmm. I remember them vividly. One of them was, it was his head, and it was the main part of the poster, mm-hmm. big, just fucking evil looking head. And then down below him was him fighting, like you said, this fight with Qui-Gon, look badass. And the other one was the one of Jake Lloyd walking along with his head down, but his shadow was Darth Vader's shadow cast behind him.
Oh, yeah.
Two badass looking posters. And then again, let down because he's a pain in the hole. And we get robbed because fucking Darth Maul's only in it for 8.5 minutes. But he's just, he's badass looking. He's got that fucking jewel lightsaber. Like, he barely says a word. Like, you got three lines and they're not even said by Ray Parker.
They're all
said
dubbed.
By Peter Serafinowicz. And he actually said, I'm going to pronounce it wrong. He said he actually recorded a bunch of lines. But they just weren't used. They just chose just to go with just... You know, we'll reveal ourselves to the Jedi, blah, blah, blah. But it's, he's such an iconic, incredible looking bad guy. Like, even he's only got 8.5 minutes, but he's still up there with me with some of the coolest looking or most badass bad guys I've seen.
He eats the fucking screen up. Absolutely eats the fucking screen up. Like, he just doesn't need any lines for me. Obviously, I want him to speak a lot more, but he's still. Just the moment, and we'll get to it when the doors open for their 3-way fight is what. Yeah, in my formative years, early 20s, that was one of these scenes where you just go, "Oh my fucking god!" Like when I got the DVD, you're just going straight to that and just playing. Not even the fight, just that opening and just trying to relive that again in your memory. Like I remember watching, like being in the cinema, waiting for that scene to arrive. And you get all fucking titchy and start getting jumpy and scratchy and just kind of getting so fucking excited. Like, even though you've seen it 8 times already, but you're just like, yeah, that's unfucking believable. But he has, yeah, his fight with Qui-Gon, and then Jake Lloyd Anakin meets Obi-Wan Kenobi. And that's a nice kind of like, hey, Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi. And me as a non kind of Star Wars guy, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I do remember like people beside me in Savoy Cinema, like little clapping to themselves, you know, doing a little kind of like, you're just going, ah, that's really sad and also fucking really cool. Like, was that a big moment for you?
Like? For them.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, well, they would have been fans for waiting for this movie to come out for so long. It must have been, but it's proper exciting, you know?
Yeah. But it's hard not to just kind of jump straight to like towards the end of the movie, but I wanted to touch on something that kind of confused me when I was watching again. Like, I know Queen Amidala and Padme is her, you know, her fucking assistant or whatever, and she goes on all the missions. But there's so many scenes where, you know, Keira Knightley is the queen and Padme is there beside her.
Yeah.
But Keira Knightley is making very informed in the moment choices and decisions. And you're kind of like, but isn't she the secure? She's the decoy. Where the fuck is she making those decisions? It just, it just seems.
Well, there's one of those as well. Like, because they have to escape, and so the little all the droids go up to try and repair the ship because the shields are failing. And it turns out, because R2-D2 is in every movie, R2-D2 is there. He goes up and he's the one that fixed the ship. So they come back down and they're like, oh, we need to thank this little droid for all his help. And fucking Keira Knightley tells Padme, the queen, go and get him cleaned up. Go and scrub that robot.
Yeah.
She fucking tells her to go and scrub the robot. I was like, hang on a second.
I'm the fucking queen, you bitch.
If I be going, I be going, you bitch, you are fucking fired. Like, the bleeding cheek of her, like it was. I just thought that was hilarious. Like, I bet you go and clean that fucking robot up. You motherfucker, this bitch. It was, but it was, and it was only done so we could set up that scene between Anakin and Padme so they could have their little heart-to-heart and fucking anything. But I just thought that was hilarious, though.
Yeah, and there's a few of them, because like Anakin, when he goes to the Jedi Council and he's going to be, you know, become Qui-Gon's Padawan, and he goes to try and talk to Padme to say goodbye, and it's like Natalie Portman as the queen is just like, she delivers the strangest delivery of a line. Like, he's like, oh, I was hoping to say bye, Padme, I'm going to become a Jedi, I might never see her again. and Queen Amidala, Padme, is standing there, and she's like, okay, we will pass on her wishes, or your wishes to her. I'm sure she's very happy for you. And it's just like, why are you talking like that? And it's just such a weird...
Well, I think that's the voice that she
can't... She can't show that she's the queen.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the voice that she's used from the very start. Like, from the very, very start, when we get into the screen, she's using that voice. It's different to Padme.
I thought a little wink there would have been nice or something. Just like, okay, yeah, as in, like, ooh, it's me.
Yeah, and also, like, this lad, right, this fucking Jake Lloyd Anakin, when later on they're able to show him pictures, you know, from a screen that he can't see, and he's able to say, yeah, there's a speeder, there's a spaceship, there's a blah, blah. You're not that fucking perceptive that you can't tell that's just your one with a bit of face paint on. And either the other two lads, like Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor, don't cop it either. The shock in their face when they find out later on,
no
this
way.
Bitch had us fooled the whole time. It's like, hang on a second, haven't you got fucking supernatural powers of fucking foresight and all this kind of stuff? And you can't tell just wearing dip makeup. Like,
Come on,
lads.
But like, yeah, it's good to touch then on Ian McDiarmid, who he's just again, he's someone who just eats up the fucking screen, and he's in a different movie. Like, he's just like Liam Neeson, he's just like a fucking a caliber above everyone else, and he's fantastic. And is that the same guy from the original trilogy? Because
He's in the third one. He's in Return of the Jedi. Like, I think when they did a re-release, like 20 years ago, they did like a re-release 2004 of Empire Strikes Back. And I think he might've been in that, but I think in the original, it was a different guy, Clive Revel, I think it was, but it was Return of the Jedi he was in. Yeah. But you know, he's just, as you said, he's a fucking class above, and that so carries good. On in the other two prequels as well. You know, I love that speech of the, when he's talking about, you know, Darth Plagueis, the wise, sitting down talking, and just, it's impossible to learn this power, not from a Jedi. And it's just, so well. He's just, and you know, even when Anakin, I don't want to get too much into the other ones, like, but he's just, he's actually totally by him as this two-faced fucking son of a bitch. Like, he's really, really great.
But yeah, what else could we touch on? I guess like the full-on invasion, what are your thoughts on like watching it again in terms of visual effects and in terms of how, I don't know how to word it, how long it goes on for? Because this, it still annoyed me, like the last kind of the third act of the movie, or the last kind of 40 minutes or whatever. It's very ambitious in terms of, you know, when things start kicking off and it's jumping between, you know, two or three different kind of story threads. It's very competent at doing that, but I always remember in the cinema that I whenever it strayed away from either Padme or the Jedi's, and it was kind of the battle on the fucking, like, and the big massive battle in the field, just kind of dragged. And that's when we get, you know, you do get a lot of Jar Jar stuff during that. What were your thoughts about that kind of, that final culmination of watching it again?
Yeah, I do like the idea of it jumping from the three different things. I mean, that's cool. But because, like you said, on the planet, it's the Gungan army against a droid army.
Mm.
There's not a human in sight. You know what I mean? So this whole thing is fucking CG. Because we have our main characters have so far been like Padme and her little gang, the two Jedi, the Sith, and then, you know, Jar Jar was one, unfortunately, is one of the mains, and Jake Lloyd, you know, so to give those scenes when you cut to the battle, they're essentially Jar Jar scenes. You know, you've got that, he's our main guy, he's the character we're cutting to, and it's just buffoonery, you know, and for some reason, the Gungan king has made him a general. General's in charge of the army. Like, we've talked about this guy who's been clumsy. He had been banished at one point, but just because he got the Naboo and the Gungans together, he's like, I'm going to make you Bombad General. It's like, General? Like, this guy is fucking got his tongue stuck in the yoke earlier on and made it numb. He keeps fucking falling over. He's no idea what he's doing, and you've made him General, and it's just slapstick stuff with a big thing. I didn't enjoy the stuff on Naboo at all. The best part of it was the assault with the what's her face, Padme, and her gang going up to try and get access to the Viceroy.
That was great.
And obviously the 2-1-1 lightsaber battle is just because it's different. Works. Yeah, and it's different from what we've seen in both the original ones from the 70s, 80s, and the more recent ones, in that the lightsaber fighting in this was like dancing. You know, it was almost like fucking ballet. Like the stuff that they're doing in these, the three movies, the flips, the spins, everything is just super, you know, choreographed to death. Whereas you look at, say, the original ones, it's supposed to be fucking really basic stuff. And even the fights between, like, Rey and Rilo Kylo Ren in the next ones, you know, and they're cool, you know, but it's still not fucking jumping around, backflips, all this kind of stuff. Whereas this was mental. And I don't know if they were doing it because Ray Park can do it, or are they doing it because, like, well, fucking, you know, it's just because it's going to look cool. But it was so different from what we had seen previously with how lightsaber fights work, basically, you know?
Yeah, it's like, I think in the originals, there's so much, they're more, well, the first time you see it, like, they're about, it's like Vader against a fucking 90-year-old man. Or something like. It's one shot. And then, you know, the ones with Luke and Vader, like, either Luke is trying not to win or they're not trying to kill each other. You know, there's something they're both kind of holding back in their own way. Where this was your first proper look at people just going fucking balls out, like, just fucking, let's just go nuts, go absolutely nuts. And absolutely, I guess, with the modern times and modern choreography, you're kind of going, even from the trailer, you're just like, oh, like, what are they going to do now with fucking, you know, see, double-edged lightsaber. But when they get into it, it's like fucking ballet with fucking laser swords. It's amazing. The choreography is still fucking tight now. I mean, there's a couple of times when you see, like, they're you know, he's not aiming for his head or whatever, he's aiming to try and, you know, catch his lightsaber and stuff, but that's just modern choreography anyway. But when you see something like this from fucking 25 years ago, and The Last Jedi, is The Last Jedi the one where Rey and Kylo fight all the guys in the red throne room or something like that, and it's one of the worst choreographed things you'll ever see. There's something on YouTube for it where the guy does it frame by frame, and they're not even aiming for anyone. It's just like, I'm going to aim up here because nothing, there's no one up there, because you know someone else is going to have their sword there, you know. It's just really lame choreography, and this one just is phenomenal. And there's a bit, and it's again, it's my favorite part in the whole movie, and it's just, you blink and you miss it. It's when they've started their battle, three-way battle, and Darth Maul just kind of gets away from him, does a little kind of spin and spins the lightsaber over his head, and there's a little droid's head on the ground, and he just points at it and then just flicks towards the wall, and it just force pushes it and smashes against the wall. It's one of those, it's like, fuck you, we got
to open the door. Yeah, it's open the door behind him, isn't it?
It's just like, bang. Yeah. It's just like, ah, oh, fucking, just incredible. And the whole, like, when you watch it back on YouTube, they just cut it, you know, without all the stuff in between. Yeah, yeah. And it's just such a lovely watch. But every time I was watching it for, you know, fourth, fifth, and sixth time in the cinema, you just, the weight between those sequences, those scenes, was torturous. It's absolutely torturous. And it's just, and this is where that force run that we were talking about that went missing, that surely would have played a part here, where,
you know,
it could have caught up to him and stuff like that. But I just think it's so great. It's so suspenseful. It's the weight when Qui-Gon and when the red barrier doors separate them, and Liam Neeson just kind of kneels down and Ray meditate Park
kind
and
of thing, fucking,
meditate.
Just stalking back and forth like a fucking back and lion. Forth,
just
like
fucking, just, yeah. This is when, you know, Jewel of the Fates, one of the greatest pieces of cinematic scoring ever to grace cinema, is bombarding your eardrums, and it's just fucking glorious. And, you know, obviously, it's that pacing where you're waiting for them, for the red kind of red force fields to open so Qui-Gon can fight Maul again. And then obviously Qui-Gon falls, and it's that weight again. It's that weight with Ewan McGregor. It's a beautiful moment. And this is like when he doesn't have to worry about dialogue. It's just like, just fucking act, you know, you're a fucking great actor. And he's looking down at Qui-Gon, then just looks up at Maul, and you're just like, oh, open the fucking force field.
Yeah.
And that first 10 seconds after they emerge, that's angry dueling, you know. And that's like, I'm gonna fucking, you just killed my master, I'm gonna fuck you up. And it, yeah, it's just, it's fantastic. It's a lovely, lovely moment, amazingly choreographed. But then they do the worst thing in the fucking world, where they kill him. And apparently, I don't know if this is true, but on test viewings, people were always, afterwards, were just going, oh, I can't wait to see if Maul comes back in episode two and all this. So they went back and digitized him being cut in half, so people would actually believe that he died. Which,
oh, really? Yeah.
I don't know if that's an urban myth or not, but yeah, seeing him fall, you know, that would have been great. After a battle, you'd be like, ooh, what's going to happen? But seeing him, his legs trail off beside his body is like, ah, for fuck's sake.
And they did
sake.
Bring him back.
In Clone Wars,
you know,
yeah.
They did bring him, yeah, yeah, like they bring him back and give him fucking robot legs. Like, it's...
Did you see any of that? You
know, yeah, yeah. No, I started, there was just so many episodes of it. By the time I got around to watch it, there was so many episodes. I started watching Star Wars Rebels as well. I haven't got enough time to watch all this shit. But no, despite being a big Star Wars fan, I never actually got into watching. I watched episodes here and there, but I've never watched the full thing of Clone Wars.
But yeah, it was a damn shame that they killed him. But we then see, do you want to talk us through Anakin's... rise to starfighter stardom.
Yeah, but this is going on as well, you know. And the droid army are closing in. They're about to kill fucking Jar Jar. God, if only he had just taken an extra few seconds, would have been great. At least kill Jar Jar and then save everybody. But they're waiting, and their idea is to get up into this big control ship and blow it up, and then all the fucking droids will stop working. But like, none of the other ships can get through. These seasoned fighter pilots, none of them can get in and find out what's going on. But it just so happens he accidentally flies into the ship, and right in. And when he ends up shooting in to kill all the bad guys that are in there, he manages to get the shields up, shoot all the bad guys that are in there. And while he's doing it, where he has landed just so happens to hit whatever kind of reactor is powering the whole thing.
So fucking stupid.
And so he blows up as he's escaping. But like that, he's... It's the fucking stuff that's, as I said it earlier on, it's the stuff that's happening by accident. He's flying up in the ship and he's like, turn off, see if you can turn off the whatchamacallit, the fucking the autopilot. And R2 is able to do it, turns off the autopilot. But like it's here we're surrounded. There's the other good guys who are flying the ships, and other things are getting blown up. There's these droid fucking robot ships that are flying around everywhere. And like, this kid is just going, let's try spinning. That's a good trick. Like, how does he know how to fly this fucking spaceship? How does he know how to get in? It's just, everything is just happening by accident, you know? And it's not him having some sort of permanent reacting to something. Like you said, if it was the force is fucking helping, and that's why he reacts to something and him moving and doing something. Fair enough. But he's just hitting buttons or stuff's happening. He's no better than Jar Jar with stuff that's happening, you know? And it's so frustrating to watch, and he makes it out and everybody's just cheering on what a great fucking job he's done.
This is pod racing. Like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's...
Because like, it doesn't work.
Like, oh, we should, Lord Chu's like, we should turn back. He goes, no, Qui-Gon told me to stay in the cockpit of the ship, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm sure he wanted you to fly into fucking space and rather than stay home safe inside that fucking... But anyway, they blow it up, and of course,
he's not
like, deactivates all the droids.
He's just not the... He's not the hero that you want to cheer for. You know what I mean? There's nothing heroic about him. As you said, it's all happenstance. It's kind of nonsense, and it's not the great foreshadowing of, oh fucking hell, this is, you know, there's nothing in him that you see the potential of Darth Vader, or you know, this, it's, you're just told all this stuff that he's this fucking crazy fucking bring balance to the force, you know, whatever. And it's not until the subsequent sequels where, love him or hate him, you start getting to see a bit of the darkness coming through, which is nice, but you could almost do without this movie at all in terms of Darth Vader's arc. I don't think it's just like, oh, by the way, when he was a kid, he was a total fucking idiot. But eventually, yeah, he shagged a queen and fucking got his arms chopped off or whatever. But, But
bummer.
And his legs. but it, yeah, in terms of just speaking of the sequels, actually, like, what were your we know Attack of the Clones is an abomination, but well, not, maybe not an abomination, but that got 5 stars by so many. Like, Empire gave it 5 stars, the sequel.
What?
Yeah. It's just amazing. Like, and I know a lot of the, especially Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, get a lot of shit because of George Lucas's appalling decision to try and write romantic dialogue, which, let alone dialogue that actual humans speak, but kind of, you know, Anakin talking about the fucking sand in Attack of the Clones, and it's just like, oh, stop talking, like, please stop talking. But apart from the romance and those kind of cartoonish bits, well, the second one is pretty crap, but the third one I thought was pretty decent.
But just on that, like, she's like, because at one point she says to him in Attack of the Clones, like, you'll always be that boy that I remember, you know, but it's like, yeah. But then later on, she's like, but I'm into it. You know, it's just, she says, like, you'll always be that boy I knew and thing. And then just a little while later, she's like, actually, I'm into that shit. And she's looking, I truly, deeply love you, or something she says to him as they're, you know, going out before they, you know, are tied up to get killed, but you don't get killed, obviously. But it's just like, hang on a second, you've just said he's always like going to be that little boy, but all of a sudden you're like, yeah, and that fucking does it for me. It's like, what are you? Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, but I liked, yeah, Revenge of the Sith, I thought was, it's good because the drama comes to the fore. Like, I think the more the difference between Ewan McGregor's performance in this and Revenge of the Sith is striking. It's like he's aged or grown up about 40 fucking years, like, in the character. Like, Revenge of the Sith, I haven't watched it in a while, but I watched a couple of clips there during the week, just of him and Anakin, just to, you know, just to see if it held up as well. And some of the scenes are fucking brilliant. Like, their standoff in the third movie, when they're circling each other and, you know, you could have been the best of us and all this kind of stuff, is just, it's, you know, if you're not with me, you're against me. All this stuff is just, it's fucking, it really fucking hits. It's really powerful. And the two of them are, like, Hayden Christensen got a lot of shit as well, but he does a good crying scream kind of shit. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, he's on fire and his arms and legs have been cut off. You know, but
that's
it's
no.
Oh, yes, just, again, and that's
at the end of that is the painful.
Problem. Like, it.
That's painful. Like, at the end of just, the third
again,
one,
takes
when
a
he
star
just
off,
like
takes a star off straight away. It's just like, well, you've just ruined it. You just had the most horrific, amazing battle sequence with this really fucking culmination of these guys going at it who are best friends, now mortal enemies. And then, no!
Yeah. No!
That became such a fucking meme. Like.
But I found him so, I found, and I'm not saying putting this down to Hayden Christensen, but I found the character totally unlikable. Like, even the second one in Attack of the Clones.
A bit petulant in Attack of the Clones, yeah.
Yeah, and he's just fucking annoying as fuck. Like, I didn't like him, the cockiness of it. Like, they walk into that bar near the start of the second one. He's like, Jedi business, go back to your drinks. Like,
and that's early on in the movie. You know, you're kind of going,
yeah.
You're like, so Darth Vader's turn is going from a fucking stupid fucking kid to just growing up and being an asshole. And then turning bad. So where's the tragedy? Where's the Greek tragedy of that? He's a fucking,
yeah. He seems
either
to be
a dope or a dickhead. You know.
Yeah, he's been a twat his whole life. Like, I think that the Revenge of the Sith is a decent one. I don't mind that. I'd happily watch that again. I think Attack of the Clones is an abomination. And I'm sure people listen to this might disagree with me. I don't know. I don't like it at all. Apart from, I think Christopher Lee is great, obviously. But that's the second one's a bad movie. But, like, I have to say, looking back on this one in particular, it was fun to rewatch it.
Enjoyed it.
Despite Jar Jar. Like, yeah, it was fun. And it's what, just over us, so 2 hours and 7 minutes or 10 minutes or something like that. It's a brisk watch. You know, I don't feel it. It doesn't slow down too much at any point where I'm going to go, oh, come on, let's move it along.
Just get straight into it and they keep going, like, which is admirable.
Yeah, yeah. The bits that are kind of slowed down a little bit are where we first meet Anakin and all that. You know, there's a little bit of thing in Mos Espa, but then we're straight into a fucking, you know, a heart pounding pod race and everything. Like, it's paced well. It's just, well, we don't mean to book. We've already gone into the bad stuff, but it's paced well. It's an enjoyable watch. It was just for me a letdown because of what had come before and the expectation on it. But to go back and watch it again, like, it's fine. It's not a bad movie. It's just not a great movie. It's just fine. Whereas the second one, Attack of the Clones, is a bad movie.
It is really bad. And it's good to go back and see, George Lucas's world, his version of Star Wars. Especially just to kind of, and you say time does it a good, does it a good service. And that's because of the absolute clusterfuck of the sequel trilogy, and that it just doesn't, the first one was obviously kind of a carbon copy, and that's great. But
it was a carbon copy, but I love it. I just
love such great Legends. Moments, and it's really nice.
Yeah,
really well placed.
I saw that so many times in the cinema. Mm. I think I really I love that movie. I think that
feel good movie.
Again,
right?
As you said, it's so much of the same. It's fucking Starkiller based, blowing up the big. Like it's so much of it is just taken directly from the first movie, and so it's so simple. There's some great moments. The character Finn, I really like. It was cool to have the focus being a female Jedi as well. I think fucking Daisy really did a good job.
She's brilliant.
But I think that's really good. But then the second one, and the thing about the second one is that, or what's the second one called again? The Last Jedi. The Last Jedi is. There's some really great parts in it because it's a different almost kind of take on it, you know, like, and I like some of the visuals in it. I love the, when Laura Dern uses the fucking ship puts in the hyperdrive, and that's gorgeous. Just the way they just cut the sound for it, you know, and it rips through the Star Destroyer, and that's fucking cool. There's a lot of really cool moments in that, but there's just, again, some really strange choices. All the stuff on the casino planet was pants, you know.
Yeah, and like Rian Johnson is a fucking really, really good director, but it was like Kathleen Kennedy, like the head of fucking, was it Disney or fucking LucasArts or whatever. She just kind of, you know, gave him free rein to like do whatever he wanted and not upset the balance, but just kind of change what JJ had set out at his plan of three movies. And then they kind of changed a lot in the second one that kind of made no sense, killing off the fucking, supposed villain to emerge and then just kill him off. And then when JJ comes back to kind of retcon everything and try and fucking patch up things and fix things, just kind of going, how could something that's just the biggest global fucking filmic brand possible, how can you go into it not what you're going to do in the fucking three movies? Like, how could you kind of go, oh shit, the third one now, we need to fix it. Get JJ back and we'll fix it. The Emperor, bring the Emperor back. Yeah, that'll be fucking cool. You're just going, it's just such a colossal clusterfuck. Of it just shows how mad Hollywood can be and how much they're just on the they just have a clue what's going on. At the doesn't matter if it's a fucking $1 billion franchise or fucking $2,000 movie, it's still fucking seemingly made up as they go along.
Did you ever see the South Park stuff with Cartman and stuff to playing Kathleen Kennedy and doing that, like, just make it lame, make it even more lame. It's a whole thing. They completely rip the piss out of it. It's worth having to watch, actually, if you even watch the clips on YouTube, you know, the mess that she's fucking made of the Star Wars stuff.
Like, global phenomenon that, you know, something that has had pretty much its choice of the best and brightest filmmakers and creatives and crew on the fucking planet can actually fuck something up so much is begs belief. But
I'm not sure now that I say it. I don't know if it's somewhere between Rise of Skywalker and Attack of the Clones for the worst one, because Rise of Skywalker is fucking terrible as well. Like, that's so at least I can say with the other ones I've watched it. Even though I think Attack of the Clones is a bad movie, I've watched it a few times because it's Star Wars, you know. It's just Star Wars. The same way I've watched fucking Alien vs. Predator a few times. It's got cool Star Wars shit in it. So even you know, if it's bad, I'll probably end up watching it. But I watched that in the cinema once, and I went, "That's not for me." And
I don't think I've ever seen it again.
Just, I watched it, went, "Yeah." So I was like, "No, I have no desire to see this again." This was a fucking travesty.
Horses riding along Star Destroyers. You're just kind of going, "What? Yeah, fuck." It's like a Star Wars directed by Zack Snyder. Knew I'd get his name in this week. Anyway.
I was thinking last week when I was editing the episode last week, I was thinking about putting a little counter, you know, down in the corner. Yeah. Daz complains about Zack Snyder.
He invades my thoughts.
Oh god.
In 10 episodes time it'll just be like, yes, and that's an end to the episode. Zack Snyder.
Welcome to the Zack Snyder podcast with Taz and Phil.
But yeah, I don't know what else we could touch on. Just really enjoyed watching that again, apart from, you know, some bits, but they are tough watches, bits with Jar Jar and bits, you know, where you, it's nothing worse when you just have a movie that you're kind of going, oh, this could have been really good, like really, really good.
Yeah.
You just cast someone else and drop the fucking Gungan twat. Mm.
Yeah, it's and it's like, I mean, obviously it luckily these movies and the sequel movies, you know, there's nothing really that's going to kill Star Wars. It just seems like it's too big, and thank God we've got some of the TV shows that have been fantastic, you know, like the ones that have reviewed so well with the Mandalorian, Andor, Book of Boba Fett, Ahsoka. I mean, they've done very well, but they need someone competent to come in and do the next one.
It's more with Rey Skywalker, and you're just going, Have you not listening to the audience? Have you not learned anything? Just let's go somewhere else. Star Wars is bigger than just one fucking family name.
Yeah.
You
know, that's it. Give us a brand new story. You know, not have anything again. I think she's fantastic.
Start something else.
But you've told that story. Let's move on. You know, no more fucking Luke, no more any Skywalkers at all. Just give us a new Jedi movie. Will be cool. It's fun though to kind of go out and look and talk about Star Wars. I mean, we obviously haven't got into a mad amount of depth. I mean, despite the fact that we're fans of Star Wars, he wouldn't be on the same level as a lot of people that might be listening.
Yeah.
But it's still a fun world to go back to. I mean, there is nothing fucking cooler than lightsabers. It's just such fucking it was such a badass idea. The sound is amazing, they look cool. Those movies, well, even if they're not great, they're still fun to watch those fucking scenes. It's a cool world that George Lucas built. I just wish that we could have more stuff to do with justice.
Oh yeah, 100%.
But yeah, look, that was a good chat with you, Daz, about that movie. I mean, it's good to go back and revisit an older movie like this. Hopefully people will have enjoyed it as well. And we'd love to hear some feedback on what you guys think of what you guys thought of this movie, or the direction Star Wars is heading in general. But yeah, look, that'll wrap us up then for this episode. Daz, have you got anything you want to finish up with before we...
No, just keep the feedback coming, and like and subscribe. We're on YouTube, on social, even on TikTok. Happy days.
Great. Well, look, thanks as always for taking us through this movie, Daz. And thanks to everybody for listening and watching. And we will see you all in the next one. Take it easy.
See you later.